Wishing you and yours a safe and happy holiday.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Receiving a Christmas card from George and Laura Bush themselves, postmarked Crawford, Texas, is a bit of a thrill, until that is you discover there are 1.5 million others on the White House list. This year, Mr. Bush sent out a record 1.5 million cards to his closest friends, supporters, foreign dignitaries, and assorted hacks and hangers-on. The Bush card follows recent presidential tradition in portraying a White House scene cleansed of any human presence that might trigger scrutiny for hidden meanings. Last year's picture of a presidential piano was criticized as being cold and unseasonal. This year's card features altogether warmer colors, showing a fireplace flanked by two buttery yellow armchairs in the White House diplomatic reception room. Labor unions in the Czech Republic demanded Monday that stores stop playing Christmas carols incessantly or pay compensation for causing emotional trauma to sales clerks. Some stores here play the same songs all day and play them loudly. Employees say shifts have become unbearable. To listen to it for 8 hours a day is not healthy, that's for sure, said Alexander Lanier, a union leader, and for the customers it's almost unbearable as well. Lanier says unions have written to major chains such as Tesco and demanded that employees be compensated. Buoyed by the capture of Saddam Hussein, U.S. troops began Christmas celebrations Tuesday, even as Iraqi Christians prepared for a low-key holiday, many congregations delaying midnight services until daybreak amid worries of violence. The holiday brings mixed feelings for Iraq's 700,000 Christians. There are prayers for a better future, but also some fears that if unrest continues, it could revive an exodus of Christians and other Iraqis. More IE America Network news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
The organizers of a public art scheme in London have run into trouble after vetoing an image because its message of peace on earth was too harsh for a Christmas campaign. Pictures commissioned by pop star Damon Albarn proved too contentious to be projected onto London venues such as the National Theatre. One image by Peter Kennard showed the Virgin Mary with the globe in the place of her face and the CND logo instead of a halo. The other, by graffiti artist Banksy, showed Jesus with his arms outstretched and shopping bags in his hands. The head of PR for the sponsors said it was not a question of censorship, but of finding the right audience for the pictures. She added the images deserve to be seen and that they will be used in a separate campaign, probably to run in magazines. This is Don Waller in New York. On behalf of us all here at IE America Network News, have a safe and happy holiday.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Here's a novel concept. If you work full-time and do a good job, you shouldn't be paid so poorly that you live in poverty. Try to tell that to the federal government, though. An independent study released by Acorn, the grassroots advocate for the working poor, finds that corporations enjoying fat, tax-paid contracts from the feds are paying poverty wages to the people actually doing the contract work. The same federal government that sets precise standards for, say, the tensile strength of screws that it buys, sets no standards for the fair pay of people working under its contracts. The study, conducted by the Economic Policy Institute, revealed that 11% of federal contract employees receive less than a living wage, which is to say, their paychecks are too low to lift them and their families above the poverty level. In this period of economic prosperity and federal surpluses, in this period when Congress annually raises its own pay, in this period when federal contracts routinely cover the million-dollar paychecks of the corporate CEOs getting the contracts, it's absurd that our tax dollars would be used to subsidize sub-poverty pay. Ironically, while the companies profit on the backs of these workers, many of the workers themselves have to turn to food stamps, housing assistance, and other federal poverty programs just to make ends meet. This means that we taxpayers are hit with a double whammy. First, we're subsidizing low-wage companies. Then, we have to provide services to assuage the poverty of their workers. This is Jim Hightower saying, better that the contractors themselves be required to pay fair wages from the start. Which is why the Living Wage Responsibility Act has been introduced in Congress, sponsored by Representative Luis Gutierrez of Illinois. It requires big businesses that get federal contracts to pay their employees a wage no less than the federal poverty level. For more information, contact ACORN, 202-547-2500.
Hi, this is Suzanne Cowardy.
I'm El Bracciacci, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey! This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud!
This is Steve Damshire.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah!
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
From our family cheers. Have a
happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
I like Santa Claus!
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening. Burke.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, streaming from the depths of outer space on Sirius Satellite Radio System, stream 145, and beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, live365.com, and ieamericaradio.com with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can find it all at tomhartman.com. Where you can also drop into our chat room, which already is filling up with folks. It's the Christmas holiday here. It's the today is Christmas Eve, and we're going to do a little what's naughty and what's nice. But you know, I want to put it in context. This program, we're calling for return to the old values that made America great, the values that this country was founded on. That's where corporations had to answer to the people and couldn't buy off politicians. You know, it used to be a felony for corporations to lobby. It was called bribery and influencing. Where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working and middle management people getting less. Where there was a social contract, and everybody understood it. I mean, you go back and you listen to the speeches that Franklin Roosevelt gave, even up until the era of Jack Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, people understood that there was a social contract in America and in all of the democracies of the world. That, and it's not just about, oh, well, let's just throw some money at welfare mothers. No, what it is that people's basic needs are taken care of, because that's what you do in a community, in a nation that's founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed. And the most effective of those programs is a living wage, is guaranteeing people a living wage. And there is no such thing as an absolutely free market. Businesses exist because government authorizes them, and they exist on a matrix that is put there by government. That is to say, they use the currency that the government authorizes, they use the banking system that the government allows to exist, that they have contract law between corporations. They can engage in business, and those contracts are enforced with a court system that you and I pay for with our tax dollars. which is why it's entire, and they're using a workforce that is educated at our expense, and they're using the public streets for people to get to work, and they're using the right-of-ways to get their power system and their water and their sewage and all these things, and that's why it's appropriate that corporations be paying income taxes. Although, obviously, Halliburton doesn't think that, you know, reincorporating their divisions in the Caymans so they can avoid paying taxes. But it's just, this is a core issue where people can work to get ahead. I mean, that's the best welfare program is guaranteeing people, if they're working, they're getting a reasonable wage. But at the same time, we don't leave people starving in the streets, because there are some people who simply can't work. And you can go back to, in 1779, Thomas Jefferson introduced a bill to provide for the poor. Now, this is nothing that new, and it's not something that LBJ started. America has always been grounded in an understanding of on the one hand, we want to make sure that people have opportunity and can get ahead if they are able. And that if somebody is willing to spend their life working, even in the service of others, even in, you know, working for somebody else's business, that work is going to be appropriately compensated so that they can have a decent life in this country. And that those who cannot care for themselves and have nobody to care for them, we will collectively take care of, because it simply improves the quality of our own lives. It's really the ultimate selfishness. So anyhow, the eternal question of this program is, are we advancing democracy or are we advancing corporatism? And today, you know, it being the day before Christmas, we're gonna do some naughty and nice stuff. I want to go through who has been naughty and who has been nice with the old Santa Claus is coming to town song. Remember that? Yes, indeed. And he's making a list and checking it twice. Who's been nice? Well, among the folks who have been nice, actually, we'll do the naughty first. The AARP, for abandoning its commitment to the nation's senior citizens and its dues-paying members. I mean, this is a marvelous example, what the AARP does, the American Association of Retired Persons. Their CEO, William Novelli, was director of the ad agency. Yeah, the founder of the ad agency, Novelli and somebody or other, that did the Harry and Louise ads. You remember those? That just blew the Bill Clinton attempt at Medicare reform. Well, it wasn't Medicare. I mean, it was an entire health system reform program out of the water. It was his ad agency that put that thing together. And this guy, you know, right-wing crank has made his way up to the top of, well, I shouldn't call him a crank. I don't know. He's probably a very decent person. You know what's amazing is I am absolutely convinced that everybody, even Ann Coulter, believes that they're doing the right thing. It's very rare that you encounter somebody who just knows that they are in every dimension of their life doing the wrong thing and can survive. I mean, people like that tend to go down in flames pretty quickly. And I'm sure he's got some rationale and rationalizations for what he's doing. But the bottom line is that AARP, which, you know, a nonprofit organization, which has built a reputation of being an advocacy group for seniors, has instead, under William Novelli's management, become an advocacy group for the nation's largest corporations, in particular the insurance corporations, who are going to make out like bandits with this Medicaid bill, which AARP spent $7 million advertising all across the United States. And now we have, for example, this AP story. Senior citizens angry over AARP's endorsement of the Medicare bill are ripping up and burning their AARP membership cards and flooding the lobbying group's internet message board with complaints in what could be the biggest revolt in its ranks since the 1980s. And Isaac Ben Ezra, president of the Massachusetts Senior Action Council, said he led a demonstration of about 40 people against the bill in Massachusetts. He said the bill destroys one of the most successful programs in the history of this country. And it is the beginning of the dismantling of that, you know, of the Medicare dimension of the broad Social Security. I mean, Medicare and Social Security are separate programs, but they come under the same philosophical umbrella, which is that we take care of ourselves. There's this thing called the commons. The commons in this case is Well, first of all, what are the commons? There are all the public streets, the police department, the fire department. There are things that we own in common. The common, you know, that's why states are called commonwealths. I mentioned this yesterday. And these things that we own in common are the things, generally we decide they're the things that are critical to life. We decide in a democracy that there are some things that are too important to us because our survival depends on them, to put into the hands of people who can then use them to squeeze us for profit. It's why up until the Reagan Revolution, the vast majority of hospitals in the United States, and it may well have been all of them, I believe the laws were state by state, so I can't say absolutely, but in every state I ever lived in, and I've lived in four, that the hospitals were all nonprofits. They were required by law to be nonprofits. Because nobody wanted a for-profit corporation to have their hands around the throat of our health care system. Well, Bill Frist, I mean, you know, when they started legalizing profit corporations moving into the hospital business, that's how Bill Frist's family made their hundreds of millions. The head of the Republican head of the Senate, a former physician. So, anyhow, we have these nonprofits like AARP that are supposed to, that have put themselves forward as advocating for the commons, advocating for their constituents. But the bottom line is that nonprofits won't save our commons any more than for-profits will. And, you know, this is the big myth. I mean, corporations are running all these ads. It's called greenwashing. They're saying, look at all this wonderful work that we're doing. You know, tobacco actually will kill you. We're telling you about it. Or, you know, we're helping, you know, we're giving money to help educate kids about the dangers of alcohol. And these kind of things. Corporations aren't going to save the commons. The Supreme Court has ruled that if an officer in a corporation does anything that doesn't enhance corporate profits, that person has, quote, failed in their fiduciary responsibility, end quote, which is a crime. And it's therefore... corporations, when they do what looks like altruism, it's really advertising wrapped in the appearance of altruism, and it's not it. The only way that we can protect our commons is by having institutions that we own, not that we can become members of like the AARP, but that we own, and that we elect the people who run them. And we can pull those people back by not electing them, by choosing to vote against them. And that's called government in a democracy. Yeah, it's just amazing to hear cons rant and rail against government as if this was the Soviet Union. It's not. We have a democracy here, not a dictatorship. So anyhow, the naughty was the AARP. The nice is MoveOn.org. MoveOn.org has done some just extraordinary stuff. In talking about nonprofit organizations, done some just extraordinary stuff in the last year, and a year and a half or so since they just kind of came out of nowhere. And we had Eli on the program a while ago, one of the founders of MoveOn.org. And here's one of their ads, just one of the ads that they've run. It's just great. Just
we could have built 10,000 new schools or hired almost 2 million new teachers. We could have rebuilt our electric grid. We could have insured more of our children. Instead, George Bush wants to spend that $87 billion in Iraq. If there's money for Iraq, why isn't there money for America? The truth is, we're not being led. We're being misled.
Yeah, powerful ads. So, our naughty and nice AARP and MoveOn.org in the category of nonprofit organizations. And MoveOn.org, of course, is www.moveon.org if you want to go check them out. And AARP is www.aarp.org if you want to let them know what you think about them. And it's a little problematic. Nice in the category of troops. Nice are U.S. troops, the named Times Person of the Year. Congratulations for uncommon skills and service for the choice each one of them has made, and each one's and the ones still ahead for the challenge of defending not only our freedoms, but those barely stirring half a world away, as Time Magazine says. Naughty, the Bush administration for trying to roll back the imminent danger pay from $225 to $150. and the family's separation allowance from $250 to $100 for our American troops. Naughty and nice U.S. troops. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back.
Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feels fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy, from the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get the stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling snotty, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Tom Hartman Show.
Ta-da! We have caught somebody doing something right. Yes, indeed, folks. Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich has introduced a bill into the United States Congress called the Benjamin Franklin True Patriot Act. And Dennis Kucinich's law would repeal sections of the USA Patriot Act that authorize sneak and peek searches, warrantless library, medical, and financial record services, and the detention and deportation of non-citizens without meaningful judicial review. Beyond the Patriot Act, the bill also cements the fundamental right of attorney-client privilege and restores transparency in the Department of Justice and Homeland Security by revoking FOIA, Freedom of Information Act secrecy orders, along with other important provisions. As Dennis Kucinich said, and I quote, after September 11th, Americans did not authorize the deterioration of the first, 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 14th Amendments.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's a Kwanzaa celebration. Honor elders from the family tree. If not for them, there'd be no you and me receiving glory from above. It's a
Kwanzaa celebration. Come together with your family. To our history with the harvest of our love.
And welcome back. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. And, Shelby at radiopower.org, this great organization that streams our program on the web to nearly 100 countries so far, and my understanding is well over 10,000 people. She sent me this thing this morning, Why Christmas Should Be More Commercial, from the Ayn Rand Institute, which gets us to our naughty and nice think tanks. But before I get to this, let me just share with you this quick little little clip from it that adbusters.org put together that kind of puts this into perspective.
The average North American consumes 5 times more than a Mexican, 10 times more than a Chinese person, and 30 times more than a person from India. We are the most voracious consumers in the world. A world that could die because of the way we North Americans live.
And so in response, the Ayn Rand Institute says, Why Christmas Should Be More Commercial. Contrary to lore, this holiday was established by Americans to celebrate worldly goods and happiness. It was taken over by Christianity. Yes, that's, of course, why it's called Christmas. Christmas is by Leonard Pykoff. Christmas in America is an exuberant display of human ingenuity, capitalist productivity, and the enjoyment of life. Yet all of these are castigated as materialistic. The real meaning of the holiday, we are told, is assorted nativity tales and altruist injunctions like love thy neighbor that no one takes seriously. Well, I would suggest that Leonard has missed something in one of those critical developmental phases or something. He goes on, he wraps this thing up. America's tragedy is that its intellectual leaders have repeatedly tried to replace happiness with guilt by insisting that the spiritual meaning of Christmas is religion and self-sacrifice for Tiny Tim or his equivalent. Well, you know, Christmas is not about guilt for me. Just the whole holiday season. Sorry, Leonard, but I think most people who have some sense of celebration of Christmas do it for very positive reasons. For us, it's a time that all our children come home and we get together with them, so it's a time of family. I mean, it's a time of, just an anchoring to a tradition. It's for those who find the religious dimension of it meaningful. It's not about self-flagellation and guilt. It's about connecting with a mystical experience, something larger than you, something that's meaningful. It's about love. It's these are positive values. But the Ayn Rand Institute says, but the spiritual must start with recognizing reality. Life requires reason, selfishness, capitalism. That is what Christmas should celebrate. Off it goes. And on the other hand, the positive think tanks. Oh, and the other downer think tank, the Heritage Foundation's townhall.com. I'll give you the positive ones after the break. But here, get this. This is Kathleen Parker runs this op-ed piece in the Heritage Foundation's website, quoting a letter that she got. She says, these bastards like Clark and Kerry and that incipient-ass Dean and Gephardt and Kucinich and that absolute mental midget Sharpton race baiter should all be lined up and shot. I mean, this is the quality of the discourse we're getting out of the conservative think tanks. It's really, I think, frankly, rather tragic, this and the whole kind of culturism of America. I'll have something to read to you a little later on that I think is just amazing in that context, or share with you. And the positive think tanks, I'll tell you about when we come right back from this break. Stay tuned. This is Tom Harpin on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back in a moment.
In high places. They've stolen our country and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life.
Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hi, this is Bill Wellner, chief engineer for the IE America Radio Network, wishing you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
The winter homes of migratory birds have a big impact on their well-being the next summer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of migratory birds that spend the summer in North America are now in tropical regions keeping warm. Their long-term survival depends on having places to call home at both ends of their range. But the winter habitat of some birds has been logged or converted to pastures for cattle. Researchers say these birds might be able to find new places to live, but they'll have a harder time finding the food they need to keep healthy. Peter Mara is an ecologist with the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center in Maryland. He studied one migratory bird, the redstart, that spends the winter in Central America and on Caribbean islands. Some of the birds lived in prime habitat in mangrove swamps. Others were forced to live in less desirable habitat that was dry and scrubby. Mara says birds that spent the winter in the mangroves weighed more and produced more chicks the following summer. Mara says older male birds dominate the better habitats, and they push out females and younger males. Under normal conditions, that gives them better food in the winter and an advantage in the spring. They can start their migrations earlier and stake out prime habitat for breeding when they get home. But the natural competitiveness of the older male birds might be hard on females if they can't find enough food in the winter. And if fewer females survive the winter, the result will be more males than females in the spring, and ultimately fewer offspring.
So if males are continuing to dominate and exclude females into the poorer habitat, then females may have lower survivorship and you may end up with a male bias sex ratio. So continuing to degrade the habitats and the wintering grounds overall is going to lower the population size.
Mara says these consequences of habitat loss for birds are more evidence of the need for conservation at both ends of their migratory routes. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on!
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I don't want millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Won't you give me back my job again? I don't want your Rolls Royce, mister. I don't want your pleasure yacht. All I want is food for my children. Won't you give me back the job I got?
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. That's Tom Rush. Tom Rush is just so good. He's an old friend. When back in 1978, when Louise and I started the Community for Abused Kids in New Hampshire, the New England Salem Children's Village, which is still there and running and doing very well, and run by some just wonderful people who just work their tails off for very little. And anyhow, when we started that, Tom helped us raise money. He did concerts for us, and just a great guy and a brilliant musician. I'm always grateful to him. Anyhow, speaking of gratitude, oh, and our phone number, if you'd like to call, we'll just throw the lines open, any topic, anything you want to say throughout the day here, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Now, we were talking about think tanks, and the naughty ones, in my opinion, were the Heritage Foundation and the Ayn Rand group. And the nice ones, there's two of them here. The Center on Budget Priorities has done some extraordinary work. They are really a very nonpartisan think tank, just going right down the middle. And they have issued press releases. For example, I'll just read you a couple of headlines here. Up to 1.6 million low-income people, including 500,000 children, are losing health coverage due to state budget cuts. That's one. Here's another one. Losing out. States are cutting 1.2 to 1.6 million low-income people from Medicaid, SHIP, and other state health insurance programs. And another one, out in the cold, enrollment freezes in six state children's health insurance programs withhold coverage from eligible children. We talked about that yesterday on the air here. And the other nice think tank, and one that is very close to my heart, is the Center for American Progress. I attended their first annual conference in Washington, D.C. a few months ago. It was great. They did a great job. John Podesta has put this thing together with some help, I believe, from George Soros. And they published this daily alert, a daily news summary, which I found very useful. And, in fact, their daily news summary for today is all these naughty and nice things, many of which I'm sharing with you. We've put a few of our own in here, too. But great people. AmericanProgress.org is their website. And I recommend checking them out. Hey, just to digress a little bit for a moment, I'm sure you've heard about the thing about the mad cow disease. You may not have read the UPI story about it, however, United Press International, which was a once great news organization and then was bought out by Reverend Moon, along with the Washington Times, and or he owns the Washington Times, I believe he started the Washington Times. And now it's interesting. The UPI has been kicking out a few stories recently that are sort of against the grain. They're not going along the way the Washington Times does. And I'm just curious to know what's going on there at the UPI and are they trying to establish credibility? Or are they trying to get out from underneath Reverend Moon or what? But anyhow, here's this story by Steve Mitchell, UPI. This published today. And or last night, 11:06 p.m. was when it was first released into the stream. Although the headline is USDA refused to release mad cow records, and the story says, although the United States Department of Agriculture insisted the U.S. beef supply is safe Tuesday after announcing the first documented case of mad cow disease in the United States, the agency for 6 months repeatedly refused to release its tests for mad cow to UPI. The USDA claims to have tested approximately 20,000 cows for the disease in 2002 and 2003, but has been unable to provide any documentation in support of this to UPI, which first requested the information in July. In addition, former USDA veterinarians tell UPI they have long suspected the disease was in U.S. herds, and there are probably additional infected animals. They talk about how this cow that went down was sent for processing to Midway Meats in Washington, and the USDA is currently trying to trace if the meat went for human consumption. In other words, it's already out there in the stream, apparently. An outbreak of mad cow disease in the United States, the UPI says, has the potential to dwarf the situation in the United Kingdom because the American beef industry is far larger, and U.S. beef is exported to countries all over the globe. We're talking about billions of people around the world, said Lester Friedlander, a former USDA veterinarian who has been insisting mad cow is present in American herds for years. Veneman, the USDA secretary, Ann Veneman, who made the announcement, said, I plan to serve beef for my Christmas dinner, and we remain confident in the safety of our food supply. Former USDA veterinarian Friedlander says she might as well kiss her behind goodbye then. This one Washington cow was tested because it was a so-called downer cow, a cow unable to stand on its own, which is a sign of mad cow disease. However, the UPI says, the United States sees approximately 200,000 of these per year, and we only test 20,000. And when UPI said, let us see the tests, the USDA couldn't produce them or chose not to. So this may be, friends, the tip of the iceberg justifying the decision I made when I was 16 years old to stop eating meat and become a vegetarian. And I wasn't concerned about the safety. I mean, back then it was a statement of pacifism against the war in Vietnam, and it just stuck. I haven't eaten any meat since then, and I'm suspecting that more and more Americans are going to follow on that. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. J.R. from Victorville, California is on the line. Hey, J.R., welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, I have an article that appeared in the Los Angeles Daily News on Thursday, December 18. I wanted to get your reaction to a couple of things in there.
Okay.
It says that salary costs of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department soared by more than a third over the five-year period ending 2002, with pension costs nearly tripled, an independent audit showed Thursday. And basically what it's saying is that there was a 46% increase in salary and employee benefits. And here's the
isn't that great?
Yeah. Auditor said most of the increased costs, including retirement and employee benefits, are outside BACA's control. And parenthetically, BACA is the sheriff, so that's why his name's in here. Noting that a 12.4% hike in salaries was negotiated between sheriff's unions and the county chief administrative office. So there's another good example of how good your unions are doing. They're busting the bank of the sheriff's department over there at the Los Angeles County Sheriff.
Well, J.R., the reality is that the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department negotiated that, as you read, with the unions. And so they know what their costs are up front. I mean, that's the great thing about negotiating a contract with unions is you know in advance what your costs are going to be. And so then you can make your business decisions based on those.
But he overspent his budget because of
and that's the fault
increases.
Of the union?
These increases, and again, it leads me back to the question I asked before, who's the master and who's the servant in these deals?
Well, the goal is to create a balanced playing field where neither is the master or the servant.
Yeah,
and in most situations, and that's what a union, I mean, as you said, this contract was negotiated. That means both sides agreed to it, which means there wasn't a master or servant here. There was an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And if the county can't get their budget act together because George Bush goes off half-cocked and throws the nation into deficit spending and starts cutting off federal funds to communities and cuts back on the 100,000 cops that Bill Clinton put on the streets and turns off the water of federal money, then, you know, what does that have to do with the union?
That's real interesting that you had to figure out a way to get George Bush to be blamed for this.
Replace George Bush with conservative policies.
The money for the county employees come from the people who live in Los Angeles. It doesn't have anything to do with George Bush and his cutting of the 100,000 officers or anything.
J.R., call your county. Call your county sheriff's department and find out who handles the money there. And call me back and tell me. I'll bet you. You know, I don't want to bet you something on the air because it's gambling and it's addictive.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, that county sheriff's department is getting federal money, and their federal funds have been cut. Check it out. If I'm wrong, tell me.
I will follow up on that, but look, in 1996-97, the average retirement benefit cost was $3,500 per employee. That jumped to $9,000 by 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
okay.
These guys
And it was agreed to by the county. And it was agreed to. See, that's the thing. That's the good thing about negotiating contracts. See, on the other hand, if you want to talk about slave and master, if you have employees at will where they have no contract, then you have a true slave-master relationship, and the slave is the employee.
No, that's not
a desirable thing.
The slave can make his decision. The employee can make his decision whether he wants to remain employed or not. He gets
JR,
to
that's true in a world
about.
Where there that's true in a world where there's actually full opportunity for employment. But you've got Alan Greenspan right now intentionally keeping a minimum of 6 million and a maximum of 8 million people continuously unemployed because that prevents people from asking for higher wages. JR, I don't want to turn the whole show into this thing. I appreciate your call. Thank you for sharing that, and we'll revisit this topic from time to time. We've got a lot of stuff here to go on. Another caller said wants to know if mad cow disease taints the milk as well. I have to say I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. So I'm not a mad cow expert. We had I'm forgetting his name. He wrote a book called Mad Cow USA on this program 4 or 5 months ago. And I would refer you to that book, Mad Cow USA, which is a really, John Stauber was the author of that book, and a really well-written, authoritative, insightful, no-nonsense, no-hysteria, here's the facts, ma'am, kind of book. And I'm guessing that the answer to that question will be found in there. But I personally don't know the answer to it. My guess would be no, because I believe that mad cow disease is a prion disease that, and prions are proteins that can replicate themselves. Oh, it does? How did you find that out?
It was on,
oh, interesting. Louise just came in and said that on CNN last night, they said that it can get into the milk. My thought was that it wouldn't because it's these are prions that infect the nervous system. And so, you know, the things that are the most dangerous are things that have nerves in them, which would be limb muscle meat and things like that. But who knows? I don't know. So we'll see. Back to our naughty and nice. Nice for in the area of taxes. Let's look at the realm of taxes. Close to your heart there, J.R. Governor Bob Riley of Alabama, for trying to avoid crippling a fiscal crisis while giving a hand to the working poor by narrowing the state's incredible income inequality and shifting the tax burden to big corporations. Now, here's what Bob Riley... In Alabama, first of all, just like most states and localities across the country, they got hit really bad when the conservatives started cutting back on federal funds in order to pay for their tax cut for the rich. And Alabama's governor... His new governor, Bob Riley, the guy who won the election, by the way. I mean, the Democrat won the election the night of the election, and overnight, the electronic voting machines noticed somehow that, as I recall, it was 8,000 votes, maybe it was 12,000, but it was a small number of votes, really should have been Bob Riley's votes, not his Democratic opponent, the former governor, and they just moved them. And the former, and the Democrat who was running, you know, tried to get a recount, and they said, no, you can't recount these things. They're digital. And so, anyhow, maybe this is his karma coming back here, Bob Riley. As the Associated Press reports reported this before the taxpayers rejected this, the Alabama governor calls tax hike Christian duty. Alabama's new governor is trying to persuade voters to approve the biggest tax increase in state history by telling them it is their Christian duty, reports the AP. Republican Governor Bob Riley's $1.2 billion tax package, is alienating even the Christian coalition. Riley says the tax increase is needed to erase Alabama's biggest deficit since the Depression and improve education. The plan also seeks to help the poor by raising the income level at which people have to begin paying state taxes. And here's the kicker. If you live in Alabama and you work for a living and you are a family of four and you earn $4,600 a year, you have to pay income taxes. Thomas Jefferson wrote about this at some length. I don't have the quote right in front of me. In fact, let me share with you our quote for today, our Wednesday quote. This is from a letter to DuPont Nemours, April 24, 1816. He said, "Enlighten the people generally, and tyranny and oppressions of body and mind will vanish like spirits at the dawn of day." Our mission statement here for this program. Anyhow, Thomas Jefferson, back in the late 1700s, I believe it's in his Notes on Virginia. I was just reading this just the weekend before last. And he wrote about how... Oh, no, it was in a correspondence with the French general. Anyway, he wrote about how taxes should not be levied on. He said, first of all, there's three ways you can generate tax revenue. You can generate tax revenue with duties and tariffs. You can generate tax revenue with a sales tax. It wasn't duties and tariffs. That's how the country was being run. He said you can generate tax revenues by taxing the wealth of people. In other words, at the end of the year, they add up what they have and they pay a tax based on it. Several European countries do that. You can tax people based on their income, or you can tax people based on the sale of things, sales tax. And Jefferson said, first of all, we should never have more than one of these because that would be double taxation. And, of course, we have two of those three. And secondly, he said no tax should be assessed to anybody, no sales tax, no income tax, who is using 100% of their income to cover the necessities of what he called the necessaries of life. And so once the necessaries of life are taken care of, then people should start paying taxes, in Jefferson's opinion. And, you know, what that threshold was back then is a little different than today, but it's certainly somebody earning $4,600 has not covered all the necessaries of life. And so what Bob Riley, the Republican governor of Alabama, was suggesting was, he says it is immoral to charge somebody making $5,000 a year with a family of four an income tax. And so he was saying, let's raise the point at which income taxes start, and let's increase the taxes on the very wealthy and on the corporations. The naughty were Newt Gingrich, Grover Norquist, and Dick Armey, who led the campaign to shoot this thing down. It was just absolutely immoral. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Oh. You'll sleep like a...
Okay, up there.
You'll sleep like
Need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, Sildenafil Citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
Look, anything related to my physical well-being, I get a second opinion. And that includes the laxative I use. So when I asked my doctor which one he recommended, he didn't hesitate. Colace Stool Softener Capsules. Then I asked my neighborhood pharmacist. She said the same thing. Colace Capsules. Now that's two people who I believe know what they're talking about, recommending one laxative. Colace Capsules.
For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors and pharmacists, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
My
fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of you may be alarmed by subversive propaganda spread by that liberal media filter, Mike Malloy, who distorts the truth every weeknight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Rest assured, our sources at Fox News confirm that we have a fabulous, booming economy and enjoy daily glorious victories in the numerous fronts of the ongoing terror wars. And besides, any problems we're experiencing are all Clinton's fault. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Christmas jams at the tunnel, shop through hustle and bustle. Snow and lights make Wonderland out this concrete jungle. There's miracles on 34th Street. On a train, get that lady with all them bags you see. Radio City for the Christmas show. We making angels in the snow, giving honey lots of kisses under mistletoe. Snowball fights in courtyards. See Spanish Harlem sing Feliz Navidad. New York state of mind at Christmas time. And
all the children showing their new clothes and toys and things that they got for Christmas this year. They're full of happiness.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and Happy Winter Solstice for the pagans among us. It is that season, and a marvelous one it is. Although it's raining here in the People's Republic of Vermont, but they tell us that tomorrow it's going to turn to snow. So we get 2.5 feet of snow on the ground with an inch thick layer of ice over the top of it. It's getting strange. Alabama's conservative governor, we were talking about just before the break, Bob Riley. He proposed this tax increase, and the naughty and nice. I mean, he was trying to do the right thing for his state, saying, hey, you know, we have a certain level of state services that we've agreed to. We have made this contract with the people that we will provide these services. And they have, you know, elected us and put us into positions of power to do this. And now we have to pay for them. I mean, it's a simple reality. And people actually do want to have schools that work. And they, you know, anyhow, so Grover Norquist, the Americans for Tax Reform, says, and he and Tom DeLay and Dick Armey, Newt Gingrich, they're inserting themselves into Alabama state politics. And they were successful in getting this tax increase shot down by a 67-33% vote. And people didn't get what's going to happen because it's happening now. But Grover Norquist says this is a shot across the bow for next year's decision making. Every Republican governor who thinks of raising taxes next year will walk past Traitor's Gate and see Bob Riley's head on a pike. Yeah, that's good conservative thinking. Heads on a pike. So our naughty guys are Dick Armey, Newt Gingrich, and Grover Norquist. Our nice guy, Bob Riley, in the area of taxes. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me? You hate me?
I put something on that says he's a great goof, liberal.
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Buoyed by the capture of Saddam Hussein, U.S. troops began Christmas celebrations Tuesday, even as Iraqi Christians prepared for a low-key holiday, many congregations delaying midnight services until daybreak amid worries of violence. The holiday brings mixed feelings for Iraq's 700,000 Christians. There are prayers for a better future, but also some fears that if unrest continues, it could revive an exodus of Christians and other Iraqis. Receiving a Christmas card from George and Laura Bush themselves, postmarked Crawford, Texas, is a bit of a thrill, until that is you discover there are 1.5 million others on the White House list. This year, Mr. Bush sent out a record 1.5 million cards to his closest friends, supporters, foreign dignitaries, and assorted hacks and hangers-on. The Bush card follows recent presidential tradition in portraying a White House scene cleansed of any human presence that might trigger scrutiny for hidden meanings. Last year's picture of a presidential piano was criticized as being cold and unseasonal. This year's card features altogether warmer colors, showing a fireplace flanked by two buttery yellow armchairs in the White House diplomatic reception room. Holiday gift-giving isn't just for people anymore, not when they can choose from the latest bling-bling for their pets, too. The Wall Street Journal reports Ralph Lauren is pitching Fair Isle sweaters and polo shirts for dogs. Others can buy sterling silver pet tags from Tiffany. Kosher Pets of Fort Lauderdale, Florida offers Hanukkah collars, stuffed dreidels, and even kosher dog biscuits. Some pet owners try to get their animals into the spirit of the season, but it doesn't always work. Ken Boschert of Washington University in Seattle says his dachshunds hate it when his wife puts the antlers on them. More IE American Network news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
It doesn't matter if you're naughty or nice, if you're a prisoner in Arkansas, you will receive a gift this Christmas. Prison officials will give each of the 13,500 inmates in the state 2 apples, 2 oranges, as well as $5 on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, in a bid to make life a bit brighter for those behind bars over the holidays. The $70,000 cost of the program is paid for by prison vending machine profits and from rebates the system receives on long-distance calls placed by inmates. The fresh fruit is donated from various U.S. orchards. For security reasons, the prison system forbids inmates' friends and relatives from sending gifts to prisoners at any time of year, except for gift packages purchased through prison commissaries. This is Don Waller in New York. On behalf of us all here at IE America Network News, have a safe and happy holiday.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked.
I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Here's a novel concept. If you work full-time and do a good job, you shouldn't be paid so poorly that you live in poverty. Try to tell that to the federal government, though. An independent study released by Acorn, the grassroots advocate for the working poor, finds that corporations enjoying fat, tax-paid contracts from the feds are paying poverty wages to the people actually doing the contract work. The same federal government that sets precise standards for, say, the tensile strength of screws that it buys, sets no standards for the fair pay of people working under its contracts. The study, conducted by the Economic Policy Institute, revealed that 11% of federal contract employees receive less than a living wage, which is to say, their paychecks are too low to lift them and their families above the poverty level. In this period of economic prosperity and federal surpluses, in this period when Congress annually raises its own pay, in this period when federal contracts routinely cover the million-dollar paychecks of the corporate CEOs getting the contracts, it's absurd that our tax dollars would be used to subsidize sub-poverty pay. Ironically, while the companies profit on the backs of these workers, many of the workers themselves have to turn to food stamps, housing assistance, and other federal poverty programs just to make ends meet. This means that we taxpayers are hit with a double whammy. First, we're subsidizing low-wage companies. Then, we have to provide services to assuage the poverty of their workers. This is Jim Hightower saying, better that the contractors themselves be required to pay fair wages from the start. Which is why the Living Wage Responsibility Act has been introduced in Congress, sponsored by Representative Luis Gutierrez of Illinois. It requires big businesses that get federal contracts to pay their employees a wage no less than the federal poverty level. For more information, contact Acorn, 202-547-2500.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
Doug Stepman's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Naughty and nice. We are looking at, on this holiday season here, checking the list, making a list and checking it twice here. Who's been naughty and nice? And our naughty for the day, or not for the day, as we go through the list here, our naughty House Majority Leader Tom DeLay for using poor children as a pretext to get around the law and funnel charitable contributions to wine and dine corporate fat cats for partisan political purposes. You remember this thing? Tom DeLay set up this charity, a 501c3 charity, a nonprofit. You give money to it, and it's tax deductible. And that charity is then sponsoring some of the big hoop-de-doops that are going to happen during the Republican National Committee, or convention, rather, where the lobbyists and the corporate fat cats get to hang out with the politicians that they have bought. And the nice, of course, are kids for being so darn cute, isn't it? Just, you know, kids are wonderful. Naughty and nice Senators John McCain and Chuck Hagel are on the nice category, and Republicans for telling the truth about the war in Iraq. I mean, both of them, on several different occasions, came out and said you know, things are not, this is the wrong policy. These guys, George Bush is making a mistake, you know, and things like that. They were willing to criticize George Bush. The naughty Senators Max Baucus and John Breaux, Bill Frist. Here's if you see this photo of George Bush signing the health care bill. Here's George Bush sitting at the desk. And let's just go around the circle here. Here's Billy Towson. The health industry gave him $601,077. The drug industry gave him $211,249. He's got a big smile on his face. Senator John Breaux, the health industry gave him $118,000. The drug industry gave him $59,000. Senator Bill Frist, a guy whose family made millions privatizing hospitals and squeezing dollars out of the poor people who show up desperate for medical services, health industry gave him $500,000, $550,264. The drug industry, $123,957. Now, these are all actual, you know, here's the cash guy numbers. I mean, you throw on top of these the thousands of trips these guys get all over the world and the lavish goodies and the bennies, and it just goes on and on. Senator Orrin Hatch was there. He had a big smile on his face, $743,940 from the health industry, $433,324 from the drug industry. Senator Max Baucus, $646,000 from the health industry, $145,000 from the drug industry. Senator Charles Grassley, $573,000 from the health industry, $217,000 from the drug industry. Denny Hastert, the Speaker of the House, the health industry gave him over $500,000, almost $200,000 from the drug industry. Representative Tom DeLay, over $250,000 from the health industry, and $78,000 from the drug industry. And, of course, George Bush signing the bill. The health industry gave him $7,549,695, and the drug industry gave him nearly $1 million. Now, if you look at, on our website at TomHartmann.com, you'll find a thing called Tom Hartmann's 10 Steps to Restore Democracy to America. This illustrates the absolute crime that is being committed in the United States of the sale of the most valuable and vital of our commons, our government, to for-profit interests, to corporations. And the way that I address this here is the human rights are for humans. Corporations are not persons. We must update the 14th Amendment to insert the word natural before the word person, so corporations can no longer claim the right to lie, the right to hide their crimes, the right to buy politicians and influence elections, and the right to force themselves on communities that don't want them. Corporate charter laws should be amended on a state-by-state basis to reinstate the spirit of the Sherman Antitrust Act by again outlawing the ownership of one corporation by another. I mean, it's really strange. Corporations want to have it both ways. Corporate lawyers say a corporation is a person. It's an artificial person, but it's a person, and therefore should have privacy rights. So, for example, one of the big chemical companies. There was a whistleblower who notified the EPA that they were polluting. The EPA shows up and says, "Hi, we're here to do a surprise inspection of your chemical factory." And the chemical company says, "No, sorry, you can't do that." And the EPA says, "Well, we were created to do that." And Dow says, the chemical company says, "No, sorry, under the Fourth Amendment," well, it was Dow Chemical, "under the Fourth Amendment, we are a person. We have Fourth Amendment rights of privacy." You know, the Fourth Amendment that says that you shall be secure in your persons and papers. Persons shall be secure. Anyway, Dow says, "No, we're a person. You can't do that." And so the EPA hired a small plane and a pilot and a photographer, and they flew over this facility to document what was going on, and they were preparing to prosecute, and Dow said, "Hey, you can't use that evidence because you got it illegally because you violated our privacy rights." And they took this all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, "Well, if back in 1886... this court said that corporations are persons," which, by the way, it turns out the court never said. But the court's reporter wrote down that the court said in the headnote. But when you actually read the decision, the ruling, the court said the opposite. But nonetheless, the court, the modern-day court, looked back at that 1886 case, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, and said, "Well, if corporations are persons, I guess they have Fourth Amendment privacy rights." And so they threw the case out. Dow won the case. And that's why OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, can no longer do surprise inspections. But if you work for one of these companies, now, you and I, we're the people, right? We're the human beings. We're the ones for whom the Fourth Amendment was written. Remember? If you work for one of these corporations and you go to work, although the corporation is asserting 24/7 that they have the Fourth Amendment right of privacy, the right to keep their secrets. One of the tobacco companies asserted this also back in the 1930s before the Supreme Court. If they are asserting that, and they are, I mean, they're saying, hey, we have the right to privacy. But you go to work, as soon as you step on their property, they say, hey, we own this property, and therefore, if you come onto our property, you are voluntarily surrendering your constitutional right to privacy. And we can monitor your keyboard strokes, we can listen into your telephone conversations, we can even inspect fluids from your body. We can secretly videotape you. We can look into your credit record. There's all kinds of, no, you have no right of privacy when you step onto the property of a corporation. But that corporation is claiming it 24/7. This is just wrong. It's just plain old flat out wrong. And so it's time to change this and to insert corporate code-like language requiring a corporation to place the needs of the community above its desire for profits, which also used to be law up until the 1890s, the charter mongering era, from 1776 to 1890, more or less. Every state had laws that said if a corporation is going to incorporate in our state, its first purpose for incorporation has to be to benefit the citizens of this state. And the way that it is going to benefit the citizens of the state is by doing the business that it's going into. So if you're going to make, stagecoaches, you have to demonstrate that you're making those stagecoaches is of some benefit to the citizens, even if it's just providing them with employment. It wasn't a particularly high bar to leap over. It wasn't a particularly high standard. It wasn't difficult to meet. But at least it was there. Because now there are corporations that clearly not only are not serving the needs of the states in which they're incorporated, but are harming people in the states in which they are incorporated. And because this is no longer part of our laws, the states can no longer do what Ohio did to John Rockefeller back in 1880-something, 1886, 1881, I forget which year it was, and said, hey, you can't do business like this. It's harmful to the people of our state. You're poisoning people. You're engaging in monopolistic practice. You're driving entrepreneurs out of business. It's illegal. We're not going to have it. And that's, of course, when it all started to fall apart, because he then went to New Jersey and said, will you change your laws so that what I'm doing will now become legal in your state? And if you'll do that, I'll bring a lot of money to your state, and some of that money's going to find its way to your politicians. And New Jersey sat up and said, hey, cool. And then New York said, well, we'll change our laws. And then Delaware said, well, we'll change our laws even more. And Delaware ended up winning the battle. Delaware has the laxest or easiest corporate laws of any state in the union, which is why the majority of the Fortune 500 companies are Delaware corporations, even though, they actually don't do much business in Delaware. But I digress. Anyhow, and as Teddy Roosevelt so strongly urged us, to ban corporations from political activity of any sort. This, I shared this a couple days ago, but it's worth revisiting. This from a 1905 law in the state of Wisconsin, which was an update to a law that went back to the 1700s. Every state in the Union had laws like this on the books. This one didn't get struck down until the 1940s or the 1950s, either 1945 or 1954. My memory fails me on that, but one or the other. Sometimes I get numbers, backwards like that. And it really, they pretty much stopped enforcing it in the early 40s. But now all the states have removed these laws. This is a law that used to be the law in every state. Political contributions by corporations. And in fact, Teddy Roosevelt, in 1907, he passed a law to this effect at the federal level. No corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer, consent, or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever, or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind, or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. Is that fairly clear? Penalty. Any officer, employee, agent, attorney, or other representative of any corporation acting for and in behalf of such corporation who shall violate this act shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than one nor more than 5 years, or by both such fine and imprisonment, the discretion of the court or judge before whom such conviction is had. And if the corporation is found guilty, it shall be subject to a penalty, then by forfeiture in double the amount of the fine, and if a domestic corporation, it may be dissolved. It was the death penalty for corporations. Dissolved. And if a foreign or non-resident corporation, its right to do business in this state will be declared forfeit. People were still making money. People were still running businesses. I mean, this was the law of the land for a long time in the United States. And we were the envy of the world. We led the Industrial Revolution. We were doing just fine. But as J.R. pointed out, the corporations didn't quite like the balance of power. They wanted to rise up and take not just us and our lives, but our government as well. The largest of the corporations. Yeah, there's a lot of small and medium-sized corporations out there doing a lot of good stuff. But we have now this corporate tyranny, and it's got to stop. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
There are over 200 laxatives on the market today, and the one doctors recommend most is Colace Stool Softener Laxatives. That's because over the years, doctors have learned stimulant-free Colace capsules provide comfortable relief their patients can rely on. If you suffer from occasional bouts of constipation, try Colace capsules. If you do, we're sure we'll receive another important endorsement. Yours. For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
If your hacking just won't stop, simply cough. If you're honking like a duck, simply cough. If the rest of you feel fine, but you're coughing all the time, and it's waking up your sister, simply cough.
Simply cough. From the makers of Children's Tylenol, it has only the medicine your child needs to make a cough simply disappear.
If your throat is all a tickle and you're really in a pickle, then you're hacking off a packing, simply cough.
Simply cough. Use as directed.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is Dave.
Hey there.
Dave has a problem.
Maybe you have the problem understanding that we can be under attack at any time.
Dave suffers from TMRWM, otherwise known as too much or right wing amidiitis, or something like that.
The alarm's at orange now. What does that mean? Where's my charge?
But Dave's not alone.
Another Saddam tape. He's still alive.
There are millions of Americans all over the United States suffering from TMRWM.
Oh, there's weapons of mass destruction there. Somewhere. They'll find them.
Symptoms of TMRWM include insomnia, irritability, suspecting more than three people a day of being a terrorist.
That guy right there looks like one. So does this kid. You're not fooling me, buddy.
And much, much more. But there is a cure.
There is?
You can get the best in progressive talk radio weekdays on the only progressive talk radio network there is, IE America Radio Network. Get more information at ieamericaradio.com. Let's save our country one American at a time.
Thank you, IE America.
Let go of me, Dave.
Sorry.
Hi, I'm Marianne Williams. I hope that you'll listen to me here at IE America Radio Network every Monday through Friday afternoon. I'm talking about how we can change the world from the inside out. How do the principles that apply to us spiritually and psychologically also apply to us collectively? How we act not only as individuals, but as a nation. Join me. Let's transform ourselves, and let's transform our world. And let's do it now.
The Marianne Williamson Show, Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
The IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue and the road was full of mud. I come in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm. If I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel-eyed death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. We're doing naughty and nice here on Christmas Eve. And a couple of days before Kwanzaa, in the middle of Hanukkah, we are just right up to our eyeballs in holidays. Just a few days after the winter solstice, the day when we lived in Germany, I heard this story from the locals that thousands of years ago, on the shortest day of the year, when everybody was really getting worried that the sun was never going to come back, that it was just about to blink out, the high priest would go up to the tallest mountain, find the biggest tree, light that big pine tree, light that thing on fire, and say an incantation to reignite the sun, and then the next day, the day would be a little longer. And the next day after that, the day would be a little longer, and the sun would be a little higher in the sky, and the people would all look at the priest and go, he did it again. And thus we have Christmas trees. So whether you're celebrating that pagan holiday, or whether you're celebrating Christmas or Kwanzaa or Hanukkah or nothing at all, just celebrating life, just the existence, the wonder of existence, it's an extraordinary thing. And but anyhow, in the spirit of Christmas, we're doing naughty and nice today. And if you'd like to call, if you have a naughty or nice that you'd like to share, or you want to get into any other topic at all, we'll just make it available. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And our naughty, well, our nice, first of all, Rush Limbaugh, for admitting that he has a drug problem and seeking help. I mean, that was a pretty reasonable thing to do. Some would put a cynical spin on it. I'm among them. But nonetheless, one would hope that he could be a positive example, right? Okay, our naughty is also Rush Limbaugh. Why? For saying things like, back in 1995 when Jerry Garcia died, saying, he's just another dead drug addict. And on October 5th, 1995, saying, so if people are violating the law by doing drugs, they ought to be accused and they ought to be convicted and they ought to be set up. Too many whites are getting away with drug use. Too many whites are getting away with drug sales. Too many whites are getting away with trafficking and this stuff. The answer to this disparity is not to start letting people out of jail, because we're not going to put others in jail who are breaking the law. The answer is to go out and find the ones who are getting away with it, convict them, and send them up the river, too. And further, I don't buy into the disease part of it. We're rationalizing all this irresponsibility and all the choices people are making, and we're blaming not them, but society for it. And now it seems that Rush may have a new song to sing.
Excellent Incarcerated Broadcasting brings you live from Cell Block 9, the biggest mouth in the big house.
Rush Limbaugh!
Yes, I'm in the slammer, thanks very much, but I can still yammer. I haven't lost my touch. It's Friday, time for open line. Be a couple hundred more till I've done my time. Get down. I'll just keep talking truth and motherhood to Main Street and now the Aryan Brotherhood. And every time I mention that drugs ain't worth it, they credit me 6 months community service. Ha! Liberals! Don't you just love them? Yeah, I got my crew, in case you imagine. You can mess with me in any fashion. You really think you're going to get a piece? I suggest you have a word with my man Maurice. Come over here, big fella.
Yeah, the big man's putting us on the map. So for all we care, he can yap, yap, yap. 14 hours a day. Shout, just shut your pie hole when the lights go out.
That is my firm and unyielding belief. Now, just to make sure you don't miss my point, I'm not closing down just because I'm in the joint. But I ain't no little Jesus. I'm Rush, so there's no way I'm eating this mealy mush. No, those who do the work of educating and informing need a little extra fuel to start the morning. So if you don't like my grabbing an extra meal, have a talk over here with my man Shaquille.
Rush Limbaugh, our nice and naughty guy of the year. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hi, this is Mike Malloy.
And this is Kathy Bay.
And on behalf of everyone here at IE America Radio, we want to wish you a happy holiday season.
And a peaceful new year.
The winter homes of migratory birds have a big impact on their well-being the next summer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of migratory birds that spend the summer in North America are now in tropical regions keeping warm. Their long-term survival depends on having places to call home at both ends of their range. But the winter habitat of some birds has been logged or converted to pastures for cattle. Researchers say these birds might be able to find new places to live, but they'll have a harder time finding the food they need to keep healthy. Peter Mara is an ecologist with the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center in Maryland. He studied one migratory bird, the redstart, that spends the winter in Central America and on Caribbean islands. Some of the birds lived in prime habitat in mangrove swamps. Others were forced to live in less desirable habitat that was dry and scrubby. Mara says birds that spent the winter in the mangroves weighed more and produced more chicks the following summer. Mara says older male birds dominate the better habitats, and they push out females and younger males. Under normal conditions, that gives them better food in the winter and an advantage in the spring. They can start their migrations earlier and stake out prime habitat for breeding when they get home. But the natural competitiveness of the older male birds might be hard on females if they can't find enough food in the winter. And if fewer females survive the winter, the result will be more males than females in the spring, and ultimately fewer offspring.
So if males are continuing to dominate and exclude females into the poorer habitat, then females may have lower survivorship, and you may end up with a male bias sex ratio. So continuing to degrade the habitats and the wintering grounds overall is going to lower the population size.
Mara says these consequences of habitat loss for birds are more evidence of the need for conservation at both ends of their migratory routes. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Anna?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, there. This is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Suzanne Cowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey.
This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud.
This is Steve Damshire.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
From our family to yours, have
a happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
Santa Claus!
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I've heard newborn babies crying like a moaning dove. An old man
man with broken teeth, stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network and Rush Limbaugh, our naughty and nice guy. Well, that raises the issue of health care, in my opinion, because drug addiction really appropriately is a medical condition. It should be handled by physicians, not by police officers. And an opinion that I suspect certain right-wing talk show hosts are beginning to share. Nonetheless, such health care should not just be available to people who make over $100 million, like Limbaugh. It should be available to everybody. This is, in order to have a vibrant and healthy democracy, we must have a stable middle class. You must have the working people of a nation must know that if they get sick, they're going to be okay. That when they get old and retire, they're going to be taken care of. That is, that they're taking care of themselves by virtue of Social Security. They're paying into it throughout. But that it's done in such a way that there's actually enough there to retire on. And that their basic needs, their basic, you know, the education for their children, the ability to get food that is safe, speaking of mad cow disease, the ability to have water that is safe, the ability to breathe air that is not filled with 15 tons of mercury. 15,000 tons of mercury. The ability to live in this world, that baseline is there. That's, you know, that's what Teddy Roosevelt was talking about when he said we need to have in America, in 1913, he said we need to have in America a living wage. A living wage that's enough that a person with a 40-hour work week, I think back then it was a 50-hour work week, but whatever, with a solid week of work, if you're going to put in the days of your life in the service of whatever it may be, whatever, you know, a company, a government, working in a school, whatever it may be, if you're going to put in the days of your life, you should know that what you're going to get in exchange for that is enough to survive on. That's just a very simple issue. And one dimension of that survival is health care. And this has become a real issue in the United States in the last 40 years or so, and particularly in the last 20 years since we, during the Reagan Revolution and in the time following when the Kahn agenda got stronger and stronger, the Kahn started saying, hey, health care is not part of the commons. Hospitals should not be part of the commons. A county should not be running a hospital for the citizens of the county. A hospital should be run by private wealthy investors for profit. So if you get sick, somebody can make some money off you. And this is a terribly, terribly flawed concept. The upshot of this concept is that, or the religion behind this concept, is that anything that advances gross domestic product, anything that increases economic activity, is good. The GDP is a good thing. That seeing an increase in GDP is good, and that's all we're going to measure. And as Bobby Kennedy said, our gross domestic product, or back then it was called gross national product, he said, you know, Richard Speck's guns are included in it. The guy who was killing people from the tower in Texas, as I recall. And you know, he went through this whole list of terrible things that have happened and talked about how they've all raised GDP. In fact, here's a little clip from Adbusters that really does a good job of capturing this and the insanity of a system that says, you know, if somebody gets sick, the average cancer case costs $250,000, whether a person lives or dies. Somebody gets cancer, and the economic activity of the country just increased by $250,000. And then the cons on top of that say, and of that $250,000, somebody should get a slice of that action for investing in it. And, of course, historically what we said is for that quarter million dollars is part of the commons, or a good chunk of it, you know, the hospital part of it and things like that. And we pay for it, we use it. But the cons came along and said, hey, here's an opportunity for us to make some more money, to squeeze some more money out of the body politic, to squeeze more money out of the citizens. So anyhow, here's that Adbusters ad. This is a brilliant.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Yeah. And we need new metrics, is the bottom line. Saner metrics. And we need to re-examine. I mean, how many Americans really understand the concept of the commons? It's something that, you know, 30, 40 years ago when I was in school was just, I mean, it was there. I mean, people understood it broadly. And certainly in my father's generation, and my father and mother's generation, they understood it well. And in their parents' generation, it was a given. And to the point that, and going all the way back to the point that when many of our states were created, they weren't called states, they were called commonwealths. Because it was a government created to protect and administer the wealth of the commons. Well, speaking of the Commonwealth, here's the naughty for the Reconstruction efforts. The nice that the Center for American Progress suggested was Morocco for offering 2,000 landmine-detonating monkeys to join the Coalition of the Willing in Iraq at no charge. I have a hard time with that, frankly. I'm not in favor of blowing up monkeys any more than I am blowing up people. Their naughty, which is brilliant, is Halliburton for receiving more than $2 billion in no-bid government contracts, and then overcharging the government by at least another $61 million, and in return, feeding soldiers in Iraq unsanitary food. Here's the story from The Guardian. Halliburton, the Texas company, which has been awarded the Pentagon's contract to put out potential oil field fires in Iraq, and which is bidding for post-war construction contracts, is making annual payments to its former chief executive, the Vice President Dick Cheney. The payments which appear on Mr. Cheney's 2001 financial disclosure statement are in the form of deferred compensation of up to $1 million a year. So Dick Cheney is still being paid every year up to $1 million by Halliburton. The vice president, however, an aide said, has nothing whatsoever to do with the Pentagon bidding process. He still also owns hundreds of thousands of unexercised stock options, and those stock options are skyrocketing in value as Halliburton gets these huge government contracts. And then we see from the Armed Forces Press, the AFP, I'm sorry, this is, I'm not sure what the news service is here. This is from the Taipei Times, AFP Washington. The Pentagon, December 14, the Pentagon repeatedly warned contractor Halliburton KBR that the food it served to U.S. troops in Iraq was dirty, as were the kitchens it was served in, NBC News reported on Friday. Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown, and Root's promises to improve have not been followed through. The Pentagon reports finding, quote, blood all over the floor, dirty pans, dirty grills, dirty salad bars, rotting meats and vegetables, end quote, in four of the military messes the company operates in Iraq, NBC said. The report came as President George W. Bush fended off Pentagon reports that Halliburton KBR overcharged the United States $61 million for gasoline it sold the military in Iraq. Dick Cheney ran Halliburton for 5 years until becoming vice president. And on it goes. Naughty and nice. Nice for prescription drugs. Canada for negotiating with big pharmaceutical companies to obtain affordable, safe drugs. Canada, you know, it's interesting. Canada is just doing the same thing the Department of Defense does. I'm surprised that this doesn't get more, you know, widespread notice. But the Department of Defense, when it purchases drugs for the military, for the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marine Corps, and the Veterans Hospitals, the Department of Defense negotiates with the pharmaceutical companies. And they go in and they say, hey, you know, based on last year's consumption, we know that this year we're going to need 3.7 million penicillin pills. What's your best price? And the pharmaceutical companies say, well, you know, it's normally it retails for $10 a pill, but, you know, our wholesale is $5 a pill, but you're buying a big quantity and our manufacturing cost is 30 cents a pill, so we'll sell them to you for 75 cents. You know, or whatever it is. I mean, I'm just making up numbers here, but it's that sort of thing. And the Pentagon gets these really good deals. They're getting Canada-like prices. Why don't we just buy our drugs from the Pentagon? See, the government is already negotiating with the drug companies. But in the Medicare bill that was just passed, the government is expressly forbidden from negotiating with the pharmaceutical companies. Forbidden from negotiating with the pharmaceutical companies. You get that? It's illegal. They have to pay full retail, and that is whatever the drug company says it is, period. Well, you know, Canada didn't do that. Canada did the same thing the Pentagon does. I mean, they've got a single-payer healthcare system up there. There's one giant purchaser of pharmaceuticals, and so everybody gets these incredible deals. And so the naughty here in this is the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, for rejecting the reimportation of American drugs that are shipped up to Canada and then shipped back to the United States on safety grounds, despite its own officials admitting there's never been safety problems with the drugs. I mean, where are the dead Canadians? Right? I mean, isn't this just, like, obvious? If Canadian drugs are so dangerous, where are all the dead Canadians? As the Knight Ridder newspaper chain reported in an article by Tony Pugh, FDA lacks examples of Canadian drugs harming Americans. Although they've been warning Americans about the dangers of prescription drugs from Canada for nearly a year, U.S. FDA officials can't name a single American who's been injured or killed by drugs bought from licensed Canadian pharmacies. We don't have that, said Tom McGinnis, the FDA's Director of Pharmacy Affairs. I can't think of one thing off the top of my head where somebody died or somebody got put in the hospital because of these medications. I just don't know if there's anything like that. Neither does Canada, says Knight Ridder. Health Canada, which regulates Canada's prescription industry, quote, does not have any information that would indicate that any Americans have ever become ill or died as a result of taking prescription medicines purchased from Canada, says Jarena Vilk, a spokeswoman for Health Canada. But the cons in Congress, dancing at the end of the strings held by the puppet master drug companies and Bill Frist's family and friends, are saying, oh no, we can't have this, we can't have this, it's wrong for the government to negotiate with drug companies and get better prices, unless it's the Pentagon. It's wrong! As the Toronto Star article by Luke Eric Peterson, U.S. takes aim at cheaper drugs. And this is the Canadians writing about this. Dennis Hastert, the Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives, has lobbied the White House to use international trade rules to challenge Canada's price controls. You get this? Newt Gingrich wants, I'm sorry, Dennis Hastert wants to use WTO rules, the World Trade Organization, the General Agreement on Tariff and Trades, NAFTA, he wants to use our international trade treaties to stop Americans. This is the free trade guy, right? To stop Americans from buying products in Canada for which they have prescriptions and which are perfectly legal and safe. Now, why would he want to stop Americans from buying drugs in Canada? Could it have something to do with all the money that the pharmaceutical industry gives to him, do you think? In fact, as the article goes on to say, Dennis Hastert has lobbied the White House to use international trade rules to challenge Canada's price controls, which are administered by our patented Canada's Patented Medicine Prices Review Board. It's something that the pharmaceutical industry has been pushing for years. And they point out, the Bush administration is actually going after other companies where pharmaceuticals are less expensive. Australia, they point out in this article, which has some of the lowest drug prices of any developed country, less than half those of the United States, is currently in the Bush administration's crosshairs. We're going after them. We're going to take them down. How dare they? Bush has warned Australian Prime Minister John Howard that U.S. consumers feel they get a, quote, raw deal, end quote, because they shoulder more of the pharmaceutical industry's global research costs through high U.S. drug prices. Well, what about their marketing costs, which exceed their research costs? What about their profits that are close to their research costs? What about their CEO salaries? What, I mean, just, come on, guys. Business is business. So you can't have it both ways. If you want to have competition in the marketplace, you have competition in the marketplace. But in order to do that, you have to have a fair marketplace. And you don't have a fair marketplace, number one, when you've got a very small number of very large corporations that control it. And number two, when they then go to the people who write the rules, the referees, the ones who define the game. It's like, can you imagine a hockey game if there were no rules and no referees? Well, that's what these guys are trying to do. They're trying to say, we, and there's only going to be one team. And guess who's going to win? And so they're going to the guys who are writing the rules, that is Congress, and saying, hey, you guys, you're in our pocket now. You write the rules for us. And tell Canada and Australia they can't do that anymore. Amazing. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Anyone who gets heartburn knows how irritating it can be, which is
why you want to feel relief fast. I mean, the instant Maximum strikes my lance, a liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. My lance's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try Maximum Strength My Lanta.
Soothing at the
speed of life.
When Ann and Mike began looking for their dream home, someone else was there to help make it a reality. While Ann took virtual tours on Realtor.com, someone was there to check comparable listings. While Mike was searching for their homeowner's policy, someone was there to preview houses as they came on the market. And when Ann and Mike found their dream, someone else was there to make sure it didn't slip away. When you're ready to buy a home, work with someone who'll work with you. We're Realtors. Real estate is our life. Only Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, sildenafil citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra, and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
What does most political talk radio sound like?
Good morning and welcome to my show. I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
A little self-centered?
We're not going to take any calls right now because I want to talk. Remember, the show was at its best when it's more me and less of you.
Not very listener friendly.
We're talking about all the progress we've made in Iraq. Tom and Seattle, you're on the air. Make it quick.
Yeah, I don't really agree with what you said about...
And I don't agree with you calling my show. Let's get it clear, people. If you don't agree with me, then you must be a communist.
A little one-sided?
The fact is that the Dixie Chicks should be sent to Iraq to live in a cave with Osama. Jeff in California, you're on the air. Make it quick.
I have a comment on how the U.S. has completely forgotten about Osama bin Laden.
No, you don't have a comment, Jeff. But what you do have is the privilege to listen to my show. And you're abusing it. And I am offended.
All around bad radio.
Says you.
But there is an alternative.
What?
You can get the best in progressive talk radio on the only progressive talk radio network there is, i.e. America Radio Network. For more information, go to iemericaradio.com.
You'll be back.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will.
Get out of here.
Don't touch me.
The Mike Mullet Show.
In an interview with the Associated Press, Kennedy said the case for going to war against Iraq was a fraud made up in Texas to give Republicans a political boost, and the money for the war is being used to bribe foreign leaders to send troops. Well, Tom DeLay, the bug man. He reminds me so much of Dennis Hopper's character in Blue Velvet. Remember Frank Booth? What was he sucking? What was that, nitrous oxide? That's what DeLay reminds me of. Only DeLay wouldn't be doing nitrous oxide. DeLay would be doing one of those weird bug-killing chemicals, like parathion. You know, it's my understanding that stuff gets you real high right before it kills you.
That's the lowest thing I've ever heard. The lowest thing I've ever heard coming out of Kennedy's mouth.
This is the Frank Booth character from David Lynch's Blue Velvet. There's no question about that, True Seekers.
The Mike Mullet Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Sheepwalker in our chat room asked the question, where is that photograph of the signing of the Medicare bill with George Bush and all those guys standing around it and all the little boxes showing the amounts that each one of them was paid off by the healthcare industry or the pharmaceutical industry? And it's at the American Progress website, AmericanProgress.org. And one of the really important things to remember here is that we are not without power. This is such an important, you know, learned helplessness is such a terrible and tragic thing. It's time for us to seize our power. We have not been using our power, but we are not without power. America has gone through a whole series of revolutions, as it were. The suffrage movement, the abolition movement, the civil rights movement, the movement to end the war in Vietnam. Of course, go back to the Civil War and the American Revolution. There's been a whole progressive populist movement rolling back the abuses, many of the abuses of the Gilded Age. They grab a little, you know, the cons come in and they grab what they can, and then the people rise up and say, hey, wait a minute, we've had enough. And they push back. Look at FDR and the New Deal. And I am convinced that we are standing at the threshold of another extraordinary and positive transition. There are so many people who are so outraged, so horrified by the policies that this administration has been following, and who get it, that America really, you know, there is an ideal here, there is a positive vision here that we have held for hundreds of years. No, we haven't been perfect all the time, certainly not. We've, you know, if you want a list of the crimes of America, we can come up with a long one. But if you want a list of the good things that America's done, you can come up with a long one also. And we can't forget that in 1989, when 15,000 Chinese people marched in Tiananmen Square, many of them to their death, many of them to their imprisonment, they were carrying a 36-foot-tall papier-mâché replica of the Statue of Liberty that they call the Goddess of Democracy, and they were quoting Thomas Jefferson. We are the archetype for the world. And by getting politically active, by getting involved, by getting out there now, you and me, getting involved, we can take this country back. We really can. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Truth and common sense in broadcasting.
It's coming from a field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I want to
different...
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephens, good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Receiving a Christmas card from George and Laura Bush themselves, postmarked Crawford, Texas, is a bit of a thrill, until that is you discover there are 1.5 million others on the White House list. This year, Mr. Bush sent out a record 1.5 million cards to his closest friends, supporters, foreign dignitaries, and assorted hacks and hangers-on. The Bush card follows recent presidential tradition in portraying a White House scene cleansed of any human presence that might trigger scrutiny for hidden meanings. Last year's picture of a presidential piano was criticized as being cold and unseasonal. This year's card features altogether warmer colors, showing a fireplace flanked by two buttery yellow armchairs in the White House diplomatic reception room. Labor unions in the Czech Republic demanded Monday that stores stop playing Christmas carols incessantly or pay compensation for causing emotional trauma to sales clerks. Some stores here play the same songs all day and play them loudly. Employees say shifts have become unbearable. To listen to it for 8 hours a day is not healthy, that's for sure, said Alexander Lanier, a union leader. And for the customers, it's almost unbearable as well. Lanier says unions have written to major chains such as Tesco and demanded that employees be compensated. Buoyed by the capture of Saddam Hussein, U.S. troops began Christmas celebrations Tuesday, even as Iraqi Christians prepared for a low-key holiday, many congregations delaying midnight services until daybreak amid worries of violence. The holiday brings mixed feelings for Iraq's 700,000 Christians. There are prayers for a better future, but also some fears that if unrest continues, it could revive an exodus of Christians and other Iraqis. More IE America Network news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
The organizers of a public art scheme in London have run into trouble after vetoing an image because its message of peace on earth was too harsh for a Christmas campaign. Pictures commissioned by pop star Damon Albarn proved too contentious to be projected onto London venues such as the National Theatre. One image by Peter Kennard showed the Virgin Mary with a globe in the place of her face and the CND logo instead of a halo. The other, by graffiti artist Banksy, showed Jesus with his arms outstretched and shopping bags in his hands. The head of PR for the sponsors said it was not a question of censorship, but of finding the right audience for the pictures. She added the images deserve to be seen and that they will be used in a separate campaign, probably to run in magazines. This is Don Waller in New York. On behalf of us all here at IE America Network News, have a safe and happy holiday.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Here's a novel concept. If you work full-time and do a good job, you shouldn't be paid so poorly that you live in poverty. Try to tell that to the federal government, though. An independent study released by Acorn, the grassroots advocate for the working poor, finds that corporations enjoying fat, tax-paid contracts from the feds are paying poverty wages to the people actually doing the contract work. The same federal government that sets precise standards for, say, the tensile strength of screws that it buys, sets no standards for the fair pay of people working under its contracts. The study, conducted by the Economic Policy Institute, revealed that 11% of federal contract employees receive less than a living wage, which is to say, their paychecks are too low to lift them and their families above the poverty level. In this period of economic prosperity and federal surpluses, in this period when Congress annually raises its own pay, in this period when federal contracts routinely cover the million-dollar paychecks of the corporate CEOs getting the contracts, it's absurd that our tax dollars would be used to subsidize sub-poverty pay. Ironically, while the companies profit on the backs of these workers, many of the workers themselves have to turn to food stamps, housing assistance, and other federal poverty programs just to make ends meet. This means that we taxpayers are hit with a double whammy. First, we're subsidizing low-wage companies. Then, we have to provide services to assuage the poverty of their workers. This is Jim Hightower saying, better that the contractors themselves be required to pay fair wages from the start. Which is why the Living Wage Responsibility Act has been introduced in Congress, sponsored by Representative Luis Gutierrez of Illinois. It requires big businesses that get federal contracts to pay their employees a wage no less than the federal poverty level. For more information, contact Acorn, 202-547-2500.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, friends. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we're checking out, we're checking our list, and, the day before Christmas, after a while, that music kind of gets to you, I suppose. It is, so we'll turn it down anyhow. Naughty and Nice, number 9 in our list of 10 ways to take back America, to revive American democracy, is the point that America is not a kingdom and we don't elect kings. To turn back the imperial presidency and return the executive branch to its position co-equal with the other two branches of government, we recommend disbanding the Office of Homeland Security and requiring the president to meet weekly in open and public discussion with all members of Congress, as is done in the United Kingdom. If you've ever seen Prime Minister's Questions on C-SPAN, where Tony Blair has to deal with members of Congress, or of the Parliament in that case, and most other modern democracies are like this. Now, in that context, are naughty and nice, the nice of the CIA, actually, for writing the national intelligence estimates that National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice did not bother to read before putting inaccurate claims into the president's major national security speeches. The CIA was saying, hey, Iraq does not represent a threat to the United States. Iraq does not have uranium from Niger. Iraq does not, in all probability, have weapons of mass destruction. And Condi Rice, well, oops, I didn't read it. And naughty, Condoleezza Rice, for saying the government didn't have a warning about 9/11 on the same day. And this was the ultimate irony. The same day that Condoleezza Rice was on TV saying, oh, who could have imagined that somebody would hijack an airplane and run it into a building? On that same day, the White House is admitting that on August 6th of 2001, several months before 9/11, well, a month before 9/11, that the president got a national security advisory that Osama bin Laden was planning to hijack airplanes and fly them into buildings in New York and Washington. And what did he do with that national security finding? Well, two things. Number one, he told John Ashcroft, who immediately stopped flying on commercial aircraft, started flying only on private chartered jets. And number two, he took the longest vacation in presidential history, and when his vacation was over and they still hadn't hit the World Trade Center, he still didn't come back to Washington, D.C. He decided to go to Florida. And now, you know, the 9/11 Commission says, you know, we'd like to see that national security briefing that you received to see exactly what it says. But since the White House has already admitted that it was there and that it said Saddam is coming and he's coming with airplanes and he's coming against Washington and New York, since you got that on August 6th, we would like to see that. And the White House says, nope. You're going to have to sue us. You're going to have to say we're going to stonewall this one at least through the 2004 election cycle. Come back and talk to us after November of 2004. America is not a kingdom, and we do not elect kings. This is wrong. This is plain old flat-out wrong, and we need to be speaking up about it. A few other naughty and nices here. Walter Cronkite. Walter Cronkite, marvelous. You know, a nice, definitely. Walter Cronkite. Here's Walter Cronkite talking about FDR and, you know, remembering FDR, asking Congress for the authority to declare war. Keep in mind that the, quote, war in Iraq, end quote, Bush's war in Iraq was never declared. Congress did not declare war on Iraq. We haven't declared a war since World War II, which is an absolute abdication of congressional responsibility. And here's Walter Cronkite about World War II, when we did declare a war. Whoop. Hang on just a minute. There we go. Now it should
sound. It was about 12:40 p.m. when President Roosevelt finished speaking, then quickly left the rostrum on the arm of his son. Already the phrase, Day of Infamy, was acquiring a life of its own in the UP and AP wire copy. But before the war could start, one final ritual of a congressional ceremony remained, a formal declaration. Through a remarkable combination of accident and audacity, it would be a ritual the entire country would be able to eavesdrop on.
Remarkable, eh? Walter Cronkite, one of my role models, I would say, when I was young. I spent 7 years doing radio news, and an amazing man. And now he has come back with a new column. He's writing a column, a regular newspaper column, and it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So Walter Cronkite, he's the one who's nice, and our naughty that goes up on the other side of that, Ann Coulter, for continuing to pump out, well, here's her description of her new book and what it's all about.
It's about the 50-year history of treachery of the Democratic Party.
Treachery.
Of the Democratic Party becoming a refuge for traitors, for Soviet spies in the 50s, and on to defeats in Vietnam, losing confidence to communism, being
losing.
Completely wrong through 8 years
wrong.
Of life, and now back to their old tricks again in the war
old
on terror.
Tricks, yes. Oh, what is it? It's just a great quote here from this sadly vitriolic person. Liberals hate America. They hate flag wavers. They hate abortion opponents. They hate all religions except Islam post 9/11. Even Islamic terrorists don't hate America like liberals do. I would suggest Ann Coulter is suffering from what is called projection in the world of psychology, which is where one assumes that others have the emotions and worldview that one is stuck with. Speaking of which, let me just share with you a little bit of a reading. This is from Joe McPherson's website, zenpickle.com. Joe has worked with us on this program for quite some time. Good guy. Speaking of Ann Coulter, I'm going to read you this and then tell you what it is and what Joe did with it, because it's brilliant. The liberals were too clever to allow a simultaneous attack to be made on the whole of their press. No one section functioned as cover for the other, while the alternative newspaper, in a most despicable manner possible, reviled everything that was sacred, furiously attacking the state and government and incited certain classes of the community against each other. The national papers, also in liberal hands, knew how to camouflage themselves as model examples of objectivity. They studiously avoided harsh language, knowing well that blockheads are capable of judging only by external appearances and never able to penetrate to the real depth and meaning of anything. They measure the worth of an object by its exterior and not by its content. This form of human frailty was carefully studied and understood by the liberal press. Let me continue. See if you know who wrote this. And it's not that. I mean, you read Ann Coulter's book, and it's by means of the liberal press, the liberals spread the colossal falsehood about American militarism throughout the world and tried to inculpate America by every possible means, while at the same time the Democratic Party refused to assent to the measures that were necessary for the adequate training of our national defense forces. The appalling crime thus committed by these people ought to have been obvious to everybody who foresaw that in case of war, the whole nation would have to be called to arms, and that because of the mean huckstering of these noble representatives of the people, as they called themselves, millions of Americans would have to face enemies ill-equipped and insufficiently trained. The author of this piece goes on to say, "What soon gave me cause for very serious consideration were the activities of the liberals in certain branches of life, into the mystery of which I penetrated little by little. Was there any shady undertaking, any form of foulness, especially in cultural life, in which at least one liberal did not participate? On putting the probing knife carefully to that kind of abscess, one immediately discovered, like a maggot in a putrescent body, a little liberal who was often blinded by the sudden light. In my eyes, the charge against liberalism became a grave one the moment I discovered the liberal activities in the press, in the arts, in literature, and the theater. All unctuous protests were now more or less futile. One needed only to look at the posters announcing the hideous productions of the cinema and theater and study the names of the authors who were highly lauded there in order to become permanently adamant on liberal questions. Here was a pestilence, a moral pestilence, with which the public was being infected." In chapter 6 of this book, "This kind of propaganda influenced men in such a way as to give them a taste for reading the liberal press and prepare their minds for its teachings. That press, in its turn, was a vehicle of the spoken word rather than the written word. Whereas in the liberal elite camp, professors and learned writers, theorists and authors of all kinds made attempts at talking. In the liberal media camp, real speakers often made attempts at writing. And it was precisely the liberal who was most prominent there in general, and because of his shrewd dialectical skill and his knack of twisting the truth to suit his own purposes." And chapter 15, titled A Right to Self-Defense, The events which happened subsequent to 9/11 in America prove how the hope of securing the clemency of the terrorists by making a voluntary submission had the most disastrous influence on the political views and conduct of the broad masses. Seeing that the direction of our historical destiny after the war was now openly controlled by the liberals, it is impossible to admit that a defective knowledge of the state of affairs was the sole cause of our misfortunes. On the contrary, that conclusion must be drawn from the facts that our people were intentionally driven to ruin. If we examine it from this point of view, we shall find that the direction of the nation's foreign policy was not so foolish as it appeared. For one scrutinized the matter closely, we see clearly that this contact was a procedure which had been calmly calculated, shrewdly defined, and logically carried out in service of the liberal idea and the liberal endeavor to secure the mastery of the world. Mike in Washington, D.C., who do you think wrote that?
Couldn't be Ms. Coulter, could it?
No, it isn't. It was Adolf Hitler.
Ah, well.
That was Mein Kampf, with the word Jew replaced by the word liberal, and the word Germany replaced by America, and the burning of the Reichstag building replaced with 9/11.
Somehow it makes sense.
Yeah, but it sure does sound like Ann Coulter. I mean, it just reads just like treason. It's quite remarkable. Anyhow, Mike, we got 20 seconds here. What's up? Or I can hold you over the break if you want.
If you could, but if I could throw in something to begin with.
Sure.
The problem with Ms. Coulter is it's like the old saying, you know, if you take 10 pounds of dung and wrap it in wrapping paper, it looks nice, but it's still 10 pounds of dung.
Yeah, well, you are very good at the blunt statement, Mike. Hang on, and we'll pick you up on the other side of the break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol is lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, Sildenafil Citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra, and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feels fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. From the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get the stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling spotty, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Tom Hartman Show.
Gizmo's back on the line in Tucson, Arizona.
First off, I'd like to tell you I'm on Sirius Radio 145 Left, and say hi to my other trucker buddies out there that listen to you, Kodiak and James. And
great.
I pulled this 18-wheel car over to the side of the road to speak with you. because I read a couple articles that suggested that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have followed pretty much the same lines to go to war with Iraq. I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of conspiracy all the way back to the 2000 election to get Jr. in so he could go ahead and fulfill the plans designed for their father in his second term. I enjoy your program. You're very informative, and I've learned a lot from listening to you, and I appreciate your program, Tom, so keep it up.
Well, thank you, Gizmo. That's very kind of you, and thanks for pulling that 18-wheeler off to the side. I didn't realize you were driving a truck. That's remarkable.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Hanukkah, oh Hanukkah, come light the menorah. Let's have a party, we'll all dance the horror. Gather round the table, we'll give you a treat. Dreidels to play with, latkes to eat. And while we are playing, the candles are burning low.
And welcome one back. Happy Hanukkah. We're in the midst of it. Happy Kwanzaa. It's going to begin in a few days. Happy Merry Christmas tomorrow, tonight. And happy winter solstice earlier in the week. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And we were talking with Mike in Washington, D.C. Hey, Mike, you're back on the air.
Ah, how you doing?
Good.
But, you know, as I was saying about Ms. Coulter, it's a pity that such a glamorized exterior conceals such a horrid and just corrosive interior. It's really
I've seen her on TV a couple of times, and I feel sorry for her. She must be one of those persons who just lives in a lot of pain, you know, because she just is spilling it out all the time on other people. If we're going to bring about change, Mike, in the world, and I really, you know, I believe in the old notion of tikkun, you know, the idea that we are each born into this world with an obligation to do what we can to heal the world.
Right.
And if we're going to do that, I don't think that we accomplish as much by villainizing people as we do by acknowledging their humanity and moving on beyond their crimes and getting to what our agenda is. You know, rather than, you know, in other words, rather than us sitting here spending 10 minutes talking about, you know, what a nasty person Ann Coulter is, you know, let's identify the toxicity there, certainly. And there is a clear toxicity, and it's unfortunate. But then let's identify the positive vision that we want to hold.
True. The thing
what's
is,
that
you,
for
know,
you?
We should be focusing on trying to heal our very desperately injured society, in my opinion, rather than hurling epitaphs at one another.
Yeah, you know, I absolutely.
There comes a time to start bailing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's time to try and get the ship floating. It's going down. It is necessary to, you know.
So what are you doing to do that? What are you doing? Pardon my putting you on the spot here, or what do you see people doing around you to bring about that kind of change?
Well, people are organizing. People are talking to each other, which is a novelty.
actually is. I mean, this George Bush has been a real blessing in some ways to American democracy in that he has brought people together in a way. I mean, Bill Clinton led two of the major assaults on American democracy, two, in my opinion, crimes against democracy, signing WTO and GATT, GATT and NAFTA, and signing the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And nobody talked about that, you know, because he was this nice guy and he was very charming and he got in trouble for, you know, Monica and all this stuff. And everybody felt sympathy. But, you know, George Bush has just ripped the mask off the conservative agenda, which Clinton was dancing to in part, and shown it for what it is.
And
I think we owe him some thanks.
Unfortunately,
for that.
You know, people forget we need to get back essentially, you know, my idea of the idealized America are the old values that were epitomized in old New England with the town meeting, with people actually participating in their government.
Yeah, yeah. And what's amazing to me is, you know, we have Bernie Sanders on here every Friday afternoon, more or less. And he says, you know, members of Congress actually respond. It's just amazing to him how rarely people ever contact him. And or, you know, call him or say or organize a meeting and invite him to come. By the way, the phone number for the United States Capitol, area code 202-224-3121. And there's, you know, you can get voicemail, if nothing else, and leave messages. It's important for us to get active. It's important for us to contact our elected representatives. It's important for us to participate in political activity and political campaigns. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Always nice to hear from you. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Exposing the con in conservatives. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
The winter homes of migratory birds have a big impact on their well-being the next summer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of migratory birds that spend the summer in North America are now in tropical regions keeping warm. Their long-term survival depends on having places to call home at both ends of their range. But the winter habitat of some birds has been logged or converted to pastures for cattle. Researchers say these birds might be able to find new places to live, but they'll have a harder time finding the food they need to keep healthy. Peter Mara is an ecologist with the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center in Maryland. He studied one migratory bird, the redstart, that spends the winter in Central America and on Caribbean islands. Some of the birds lived in prime habitat in mangrove swamps. Others were forced to live in less desirable habitat that was dry and scrubby. Mara says birds that spent the winter in the mangroves weighed more and produced more chicks the following summer. Mara says older male birds dominate the better habitats, and they push out females and younger males. Under normal conditions, that gives them better food in the winter and an advantage in the spring. They can start their migrations earlier and stake out prime habitat for breeding when they get home. But the natural competitiveness of the older male birds might be hard on females if they can't find enough food in the winter. And if fewer females survive the winter, the result will be more males than females in the spring, and ultimately fewer offspring.
So if males are continuing to dominate and exclude females into the poorer habitat, then females may have lower survivorship and you may end up with a male bias sex ratio. So continuing to degrade the habitats and the wintering grounds overall is going to lower the population size.
Mara says these consequences of habitat loss for birds are more evidence of the need for conservation at both ends of their migratory routes. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
sort of get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Hey, and here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, I am just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Oh, you've given me a number, and you've taken off my name. To get around this campus, why, you almost need a plane. And you're supporting Chiang Kai-shek while I'm supporting Mao. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm going to say it now.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. That's Phil Oakes. And here we are on the air and live. It's 30 years ago today, I was standing by a telephone. Well, actually, it would have been later on in the evening. But standing by a telephone in St. Mary's Hospital in Livonia, Michigan, in Detroit, suburban Detroit, calling my parents in Lansing to tell them that that Louise had just given birth to our first child, our daughter Kendra, and I, as I was telling them, I started sobbing. It was just the mystery, the extraordinary, the wonder of it was just amazing. And so I want to say happy birthday to my daughter Kendra today. Her 30th birthday, a big one. Michael in Kansas City has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom. Listen,
hey.
I was rather moved about what you said about Ann Coulter. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, I spent a lot of energy hurling invectives at the television set at this one.
Yeah.
And I realized, what is the use of that? So what I did is you know, I finally lost my mind and went down to the Dean campaign headquarters, and I'm, you know, down there two nights a week on the telephone.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that's the appropriate response.
Right.
I mean, that is the healthy response.
And I felt better about myself.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling my mother today, you know, God, I hate these people. And she's like, yeah. No, you can't hate these people. You know, you got to do something constructive. I was like, oh, yeah, I am. That's right. You know,
see,
so sometimes.
Yeah, and see, Michael, it's as you're demonstrating, it's not just happy talk. I mean, it's absolutely not happy talk. There are times when anger and hatred are appropriate, if somebody is torturing your family in front of you or something, I mean, you know, when you
right,
need the
yeah.
adrenaline
there's
to be able
there's
to, to break the bonds and engage in battle, I mean, then it's necessary. But by and large, it is toxic, and it harms the person experiencing it far more than it does the person to whom they're directing it. So,
right.
I think that what our response to use George Bush's word, evil in this world, or our response to the psychopathology, to use the,
right.
you know, the word of my field, would be to recognize it, to label it, to offer solutions to it, and to work aggressively to bring those solutions about. Just very straightforward. And that's how things get done in America.
That's right. And down at headquarters, it's amazing who you meet down there and how we talk. And it's like a, you know, community meet down there every you know, twice a week for me. And you'd be amazed at the people that walk in off the street to that campaign headquarters, and maybe some others too, you know, maybe Kucinich and Clark's campaign. People walk in and they're going, you know, I've never done a thing in my life in a political campaign. What can I do to help you people? Or
yeah, well, that's exactly
get on the
what's
phone,
happening.
You know?
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening with all of the campaigns of the Democrats right. now, is except perhaps Joe Lieberman. I don't
right,
know, but,
yeah.
But is that, you know, people are coming in going, hey, you know, we enough. It's time for us to get active.
But I think there is hope for the world in that way.
Yeah, good. Hey, Michael, what are you doing on that campaign? I'm just curious. I've never been inside I've been inside the Dean headquarters here in Burlington, but, you know, it was just for a meeting with Joe Trippi, just a little bit of time there. So I've never worked inside one of those things. What was it like?
It's In the Santa Fe headquarters, it's real informal. You know, I go in there and I volunteer twice a week to do phone banking. And I go in there and there's a telephone there sitting for me, and they have a list of people that are three times primary voters that we call or to see if they want to participate in the caucus. And so I go down a list of like 40, 50 people a night and call them and tell them about how the caucus works in New Mexico and what's happening. And I just stay, you know, sit there 2 hours on the phone, just going down the phone list, calling people, and you know, you get abuse. I call up Democrats and they're like, I'm for Bush. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, and I don't argue with anything, but you get hung up on, you get people calling you traitors, you get all kinds of stuff hurled at you, and the thing is not to hurl that back, you know.
That's right.
I'm doing telephone banking, and I think that's the simplest thing that someone who hasn't been involved in politics before can do that is somewhat kind of non-threatening if you're good on the phone. And we do things like canvassing and also events. You know, we set up tables at, like, you know, the Veterans for Peace events and things like that, and meet the public like that. So that's basically what I'm doing down there.
That's marvelous, Michael. I salute you.
Okay,
I salute
thanks.
You. You are the shock troops on the ground there.
Right.
I absolutely salute you. Thank you. Thanks for the call.
All right, bye.
And you're welcome. Bye now. And thanks for doing the great work that you're doing. And you know, with any campaign, anybody out there participating. Okay, naughty and nice here, our Christmas special, our naughty in the media, looking at the, you know, the news anchors in the media. Bill O'Reilly, here's a little clip from his interview with Terry Gross, played with the permission of her producer.
I'll read what the People magazine thinks.
Why? Why read it? Why read it?
Because I want people to hear it.
Why?
Because it.
Why?
You'll hear when I'm done. Why?
You know, I mean, look,
I'm getting a feeling in this interview, all right, that this is just a hatchet job on me, all right, and I don't like it. Now, there's no reason for you to read that People magazine.
Go on the attack.
If they want to read it, they can go and read it.
No, but this isn't,
no, wait a
this isn't
hold
the review
it,
of the
it.
Book. It's the review of how you handled it. And I think,
it doesn't
I think
make
it's
any
okay
difference
to ask you to be accountable for the things
accountable
that you said.
Accountable for what? You know, I came on this program to talk about who's looking out for you. And what you have done is thrown every kind of defamation you can in my face. All right, did you do this to Al Franken?
Did you?
Did you challenge him on what he said?
We had a different interview.
Yeah, a different interview. Okay, yeah. Fine. Yeah. Fresh air? Is this what fresh air is?
Yeah. See, the pit bull, the frankly rather pathetic attack strategy. Our naughty Bill O'Reilly for today, and our nice and really nice. I mean, this is just extraordinary. Somebody who addresses the same issues to probably an equally sized audience. I don't know the size of his audience, but in any case, you know, out there on cable TV every day, every night. Replayed every day. And John Stewart, doing just an absolutely great job. Here's a little clip from The Daily Show.
Since the beginning of all this, weapons of mass destruction, regime change, pockets of resistance, targets of opportunity business, it's been difficult to have an honest discussion about the direction President Bush is taking this country. In fact, when you combine the new mandate that criticizing the commander-in-chief is off limits in wartime with last year's official disbanding of the Democratic Party, well, we're left at an all-time low in the good old-fashioned honest debate category. Now, I know you're thinking, but John, every time I want to have a calm, honest discussion about these kinds of issues, I'm shouted down and harassed by the Dixie Chicks and their ilk.
So, the use of comedy and humor to defuse an issue and yet to make a point, to make it, and doing it so well, so well. Congratulations to Jon Stewart and The Daily Show and all of his much-deserved success. Another one of our nices that goes along with that in the public eye is Joe Wilson. Joe Wilson, whose wife, Valerie Plame, was outed because Joe Wilson had the courage to stand up and say, no, George Bush is lying to you about the uranium in Niger, and published that in the New York Times. And then they wiped out his wife's career and perhaps the lives of other CIA agents. They won't let us investigate it and find out. It's been buried here by John Ashcroft. But this Karl Rove's comment on this.
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
163 days since Karl Rove, or felon unknown in the White House, senior administration official, committed treason but perhaps
and,
Roe.
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
Yeah, so Wilson is pretty sure it's Karl Rove. It certainly makes sense. And so our kudos to Joe Wilson. Well done. Also, the movie Unprecedented. If you haven't seen this, you can, you know, there are copies floating around. You can order it on Amazon.com and, or, you know, whatever, your local bookstore, video store. This is the story. I'll just give you a little clip from this of what really happened in Florida in November of 2000.
Statewide, we had complaints of everything from police intimidation, police threatening people with tickets for loitering who happen to be standing in line. We've had reports of people being required to produce multiple pieces of identification when they have a valid voter registration card. There's no such requirement under Florida law.
Many more irregularities were confirmed when the NAACP held hearings a few days after the election.
I showed the poll worker my identification, and he looked at the roll, and he looked at me, and he said, "We have a problem. You're not on the roll." I did nothing wrong. I voted in this county. There's no reason why I should not have been on that roll, but I was not on that roll, and I was not allowed to vote.
These irregularities were reported throughout the state.
Yeah, and it turns out now we learn, and this movie does a brilliant job of documenting it, this movie Unprecedented, that some 70,000 people, principally African Americans, were denied the right to vote in Florida. Overwhelmingly in Democratic districts, and this, more than anything else, threw the election close enough that the Supreme Court could do the little hat trick that they did and give it to George W. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, happy holidays. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, whatever's appropriate for you. Hope you're having a good one.
Well, Mary, politically correct you, too.
Thank you. It's tough, you know.
I know.
Yeah. So.
No, I had a really nice debate at a local shopping mall with a young gentleman that's majoring in philosophy and religious studies. And I tried to encourage him to have an open mind and to seek out other information. And basically, I was, you know, trying to get him to turn off the mainstream media propaganda and turn on his brain.
Mm-hmm. Always a good idea.
Pardon me, please?
Always a good idea, a good suggestion.
And what do you think? I've listened to Howard Dean, and he seems to impress upon me as a serious person that I don't think he's trying to become the president for, you know, selfish reasons. I think the guy is really sincere, and I was sitting there thinking, comparing him to what W is, you know, or isn't. And I think basically there's a clear comparison that I think almost anybody could see if they could access the information. And
well, this is why the Republicans are so afraid of Howard Dean that they're running attack ads against him in Iowa.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
so
they do not want to run against him. They want to run against Joe Lieberman or somebody that they know that they can beat.
Well, anyway, if the Dean campaign would consider it, I think the really decent campaign motto for his, challenge to acquire the presidency of the United States, I think that it's best described as he's a physician with a cause.
Yeah, and he is. Yeah. Well said, Armin. Finish it.
Well, that's it. And I just want to wish everybody really, it's kind of a terrible time right now, I think, for our country. And you know, it's sad what's going on, and it really disturbs me. You know, I'm like Mike Malloy, you know, he's pretty ashamed, he said, of what his country's doing. But it's not really the country. It's the people that are in power. And we always must remember.
Mike's a good man, and he speaks truth.
Right.
Mike's a good man. Know. And so are you, Armin. I appreciate it. And yes, and thank you for the call. And yes, it is a difficult time, and so is childbirth. You know, I mean, difficult times produce usually the greatest transition, the greatest transformation. If you want to see change happen, have difficult times. and you will have change. If you don't want to have change, then just, you know, have everything go along as it was. And so I, you know, this administration does not intimidate me in the least. I am actually, frankly, very pleased that George Bush has been as open and blunt and blatant at doing what he has done, because I really believe that the majority of Americans are now openly horrified. Forget the polls. The polls are nonsense. In the education field, Arnaudia Nice, Nice author David Eggers, the guy who wrote a heartbreaking work of staggering genius, which was getting all these great reviews. I got a copy of it, tried to read it, and I couldn't. It must have been too staggering for my genius or whatever. I mean, his genius was more staggering than mine. I couldn't get through it. But apparently, it was a good book, and he has now started this program, 826 Valencia. Eggers and about 400 volunteers teach writing and comics creation, run workshops on SAT preparation, and help kids launch student publications. They deploy 20 to 30 tutors at a time into classrooms at the request of teachers for one-on-one work in student writing. So he's actually changing things. He's actually getting out there and being active, and he's also one of the leaders working hard to push the Bush administration to preserve the AmeriCorps. The naughty side of this is the Texas School Board. We're rejecting a widely used environmental textbook, in part for claiming that there was a scientific consensus. This, the textbook says, there's a scientific consensus for global warming and speaks well of solar energy. And so the Texas School Board rejects this book, and the board threw out the formal review of the book, relying instead on a report by the ultra-conservative Texas Public Policy Foundation, saying the authors claim that air travel has, quote, an increasingly high environmental cost, makes bin Laden, Osama bin Laden, into a hero of sorts for discouraging air travel in the United States and elsewhere, end quote. The Texas School Board held hostage by right-wing cranks and fanatics. And what's particularly sad and ironic about this is that as Texas goes, so goes the rest of the nation, because the school book, Texas is such a large purchaser of school books that the publishers have to, you know, whatever Texas wants, Texas gets, and the rest of the country gets it as well. It's a real shame. But education is an absolute human right, and it's a necessary thing in a democracy. We need to be working for it and fixing things like this problem. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Ugh. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a.
Need more tissues.
Sleep like a.
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red 90?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
Look, anything related to my physical well-being, I get a second opinion. And that includes the laxative I use. So when I asked my doctor which one he recommended, he didn't hesitate. Colace Stool Softener Capsules. Then I asked my neighborhood pharmacist. She said the same thing. Colace Capsules. Now that's two people who I believe know what they're talking about, recommending one laxative. Colace Capsules.
For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors and pharmacists, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
If your hacking just won't stop, simply cough. If you're honking like a duck, simply cough. If the rest of you feel fine, but you're coughing all the time, and it's waking up your sister, simply cough.
Simply cough. From the makers of Children's Tylenol, it has only the medicine your child needs to make a cough simply disappear.
If your soda's all a tickle, then you're really in a pickle. Then you're hacking off a packing, simply cough.
Simply cough. Use as directed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. I understand that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens have been listening to that Mike Malloy person pollute this great nation's airwaves for 3 hours every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Surely you can find a more productive use of your evening hours, like organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly in your victory garden. Or you could spend the 3 hours simply standing in your yard, saluting the flag on your house, apartment, or trailer, or whatever you little people live in. I'm told some chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time when they feel the unnatural and un-American temptation to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm certain in time you'll find the method that works best for you and your family. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak. And I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Zone. This is Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. We are doing our naughty and nice for Christmas here, going through the list of in the different areas of our lives, of our world, who's doing well and who's out of control. And our next one is the environment. Before I get to that, though, just let me tell you, our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont. The music was engineered or edited by Brad Walrod in New York City. And thanks to Char Jones for showing up on Christmas Eve and engineering our program brilliantly, as always, in Detroit, Michigan. Thanks to the folks in the chat room for sharing the afternoon with us. It's always wonderful to see you there and to get feedback from you and hear your thoughts and to converse with you during the breaks. Thank you very much. Okay. Naughty and nice. Nice trees. They make the world a more beautiful place. They provide sound buffers for large urban areas. They reduce utility bills. Using them as windbreaks, they can give you 10 to 20% cooling in hot climates and 20 to 30% heating reduction of heat necessary in cold climates. They reduce flooding by intercepting rainfall. They produce a sense of rootedness in community. They clean the air. They remove dust particles, absorb ozone, carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, other pollutants. They soften the harsh contour building. They do all kinds of wonderful things. Trees prevent soil erosion, freshen the atmosphere. Our naughty in the environmental era or area, the Bush administration. Yeah, George Bush, for proposing his Healthy Forests initiative. As CBS News reported, quoting Sean Cosgrove, a forest expert with the Sierra Club, quote, "The timber industry fought real hard for this bill for a reason, and it's not because they want to remove brush and chaparral. Through and through, this thing is about increasing commercial logging with less environmental oversight." We have got to stand up and take this country back. And you and I, we can do it. We can do it. We have done it before. We will do it again. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this